Coming up next, David Letterman talks to Tim DeChristopher.
Our next guest is an environmental activist who served almost 2 years in federal prison. 2 years in federal prison.
Gee.
Oh, for the love of God.
Tell you.
Like being here every night.
Well, have it up.
2 years in federal prison, resulting from an act of civil disobedience. He is the subject of a new documentary entitled Bidder, B-I-D-D-E-R, 70. Please welcome Tim DeChristopher, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. I want to make sure we get the important parts of this story. It's multifaceted, and all of it's important. Mm-hmm. Tell us, Bidder 70, there's an auction. You go to the auction. What's happening at the auction? What do you do?
It's a Bureau of Land Management auction for oil and gas rights.
Now, what does that mean?
It means that the Bureau of Land Management controls a lot of the public land in the West, and it's a multi-use agency. Mm-hmm. So that land is used for a lot of things, and one of the things it's used for is for energy development.
If they have reason to believe that there's gas and oil underneath the land, people holding mineral rights can then drill? Is that how it works?
Right, and so they're auctioning off the mineral rights.
I see. Yeah.
In these auctions.
And where does this land? Is it in Utah?
Yeah, this is all in Utah. Mm-hmm. And these are things that happen on a regular basis. This one was an unusual auction, unusual for its size, unusual for the proximity to national parks.
What national parks was it near?
Canyonlands and Arches.
And these are in Utah, and they're stunningly beautiful works of
natural
art.
Yeah, this is kind of the iconic landscape that people know.
How many acres are we talking about?
The parcels that I ended up winning were about 22,500 acres.
And in total, they were auctioning how many acres?
About 150,000.
150,000 acres.
Yep.
Now, how long had this land been up for auction? Was this a new development, or had this been in existence prior, or what was the circumstance?
Well, it was both, because the Bureau of Land Management has what they call resource management plans, which are these long-term development plans for how they're going to use the land. And these particular parcels had always been off limits. And when the Bush administration came in, they started rewriting those long-term management plans. And that took them the entire 8 years to rewrite those.
At one point, under other administration, this land was considered sacred, maybe not the right word, but important to, for the culture of the community, the country, and
they,
the land.
They decided it was not appropriate for drilling.
Not appropriate for drilling, okay.
And so then they rewrote this, and then right before this auction happened, they announced all these new parcels, which had always previously been off limits, which were now being auctioned off.
So, and this comes coincides with the hunger for new, easy to find oil and gas. The prices are skyrocketing. We've got to get in and find more and more gas.
Yeah, it's kind of a prime example of the drill now, think later mentality that's really driving the climate crisis.
So, so now you go to the auction, and what were your plans to go to the auction? What were you going to do?
My plan was to do anything that I could to stand in the way of this. Mm-hmm. Over the course of that year and the years leading up to it, I'd been growing more and more concerned with climate change, and seeing that what we were doing as a climate movement wasn't working, certainly wasn't working for getting our government to do anything about climate change. And so I'd been building up a commitment to do something greater. And at the same time, I'd been studying social movement history, seeing the need for civil disobedience and for confrontational strategies for social movements.
Did you have a specific strategy in mind when you went to the auction?
No. No, I had a commitment to do something to try to stand in the way of this auction, but thought that might be making a speech or standing up and yelling. It was right after that guy threw the shoe at Bush, so it was kind of in the back of my mind.
Did you have a spare shoe with you?
No, I was using both of them.
Both of your, all right, so you go to the auction. It's held at a federal courtroom building, something like that?
It was held at the BLM offices, were actually upstairs from a shopping mall in Salt Lake City.
So now they open the land for auction, and a guy says to you, are you here to bid?
Yeah. I walked in expecting to cause some kind of disruption. They said, are you here to be a bidder? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yes, I am.
Right.
Still thinking, okay, I'll sign up to be a bidder so that I can get inside and make a speech or throw a shoe at somebody.
Right.
Once I got inside, then I had that bid card in my hand, number 70, and realized that I could actually have a very big impact.
So that was it. You just walk in. They say, here's your thing. Enjoy the auction.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, I didn't quite know what to expect before I walked in, but it was kind of the TV auction with a guy in a cowboy hat talking fast. And
and then you start bidding on parcels of land.
Yeah. It took me a little bit to make the decision, but first I started driving up the prices, and then I went all in.
Mm-hmm. What kind of money are we talking about for one of these leases?
It started at $2 an acre. Mm-hmm. I won some parcels for $2 an acre.
Right.
Most of them were going for 10 to 12 before I started bidding. And that was part of what spurred me to action, was seeing just how cheaply we're letting go of our public resources. And when I was just driving up the prices, I would drive it up to maybe $240 an acre sometimes.
And you often would be the winning bidder or just drive it up?
First I was driving it up, then I started winning. And I started winning every parcel and wasn't really trying to be subtle. I was there as an act of civil disobedience.
So all of a sudden the kid, bidder 70, is buying hundreds of thousands of acres or 20,000 acres of federal land.
Yeah.
Right to drill.
Yeah.
Now, did they say, what did they say to you?
Well, they stopped the auction and took me out, and they asked what my intentions were and
what tipped them off that this was something hinky going on here?
Like I said, I was there for an act of protest, so I wasn't trying to be subtle.
Right.
I was winning every single parcel. Mm-hmm. And all you got to do is like flick your bid card just a little bit here. And I started raising it higher and higher each time I'd win, until I was holding it up way above my head. And then I just stopped bringing it down in between bids. I was just holding it up constantly.
And so they say, Bob, we got a wise guy in row 8. Let's run him.
Yeah. So this law enforcement agent pulls me out and asks me what's going on. And I said, I'm trying to stop this auction in any way that I can because I think it's a threat to my future and a fraud against the American people. And he said, so you don't plan on paying for those parcels? and I said no. They interrogated me for a few hours and then released me. And that began a very long legal process that lasted about 2.5 years before I was finally convicted of 2 felonies and sentenced to 2 years in prison.
Now, here's how dumb I am. What you have described up to the 2.5 years in prison or whatever it was sounds like a prank. How do you end up doing 2 years in a federal prison for what sounds to me like a prank?
I think that's a complicated issue. I mean, part of it is certainly that, the people who lost money because that auction was disrupted are the people that control our government and pull the strings on a lot of our federal agencies, including our Department of Justice. So they were certainly upset.
But why didn't they just say, remember Bidder 70? Forget all that. We're starting over. Why couldn't they have just, they get rid of you. Okay, now here's the auction. We had a goofball screwing up our auction.
And that's the more interesting part, because I think people were ready for something like this in the climate movement. And that became the much more important part of what I'd done, is that I had pushed the boundaries for the climate movement. And that really vaulted me into a new role for the movement, where I was out there speaking about civil disobedience. I was traveling around the country as an activist at that point. And people were listening. And the climate movement was in this transition phase where the appeasement strategies of big green groups had failed, and we were looking for something bolder and more confrontational.
So let me ask you, did your strategy to protect that land at auction, that worked? Because the BLM was ordered by the federal courts to take another look at that allocation?
Yeah. They revoked that auction, rescinded all those parcels. So it worked in that direct sense.
In that direction, you were successful in disrupting the auction.
Right. But going on, the impacts turned out to be much more important for what it meant for the climate movement.
Let's show a clip of the documentary, which is fascinating, and we're just scratching the surface here. I think we're going to see you in action at the auction. Take a look here. Tim DeChristopher.
And a 4.5 and a 4.75 and a 5. Now listen, 5.5.
I saw right away that with that bid card that they'd given me, I could really disrupt this process. I had all these visions of my future and all the catastrophic effects of climate change. But if I start to bid on this, there's a decent chance I could go to prison. Could I live with that? And I thought, well, yeah, it would suck, but I could live with it. But knowing that I had a chance right in front of me to do something about it and didn't take it because I was afraid of the consequences. And I thought, no, I couldn't live with that.
So you go to prison for, there you go, 2 years, 21 months.
Yeah. Yeah, it did 21 months.
Now,
just got released April 21st.
Knowing what we know about things, climate change and so forth, was it valuable, the sacrifice of 2 years in prison? Was it? Do you feel good about what you have done?
Are
we better off for your efforts, do you think?
I think I'm better off for my efforts.
In what sense?
I'm more at peace knowing that my actions in response to this crisis are actually appropriate to the scale of the crisis.
So it's at some point you can say to your family, to your friends, or to yourself, I tried. I tried to do a little something. I tried to help.
Yeah. And, I expected the negative impacts of this. I expected to go to prison. Prison turned out to be not nearly as bad as I expected.
Now, that can't possibly be true.
Well, we have a vastly different justice system today than we did a generation ago, with an order of magnitude more people in prison. And one of the things that a lot of people don't stop and think about is that one of the consequences of mass incarceration is that our prisons are filled with really normal people. You know, mass incarceration didn't happen because of some drastic shift in human nature. It happened because the private prison industry was able to change our laws that allow us to lock up a lot more normal people.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's how we get our audiences. But now, when you felt the activism in you regarding climate change, you must have been hopeful and optimistic that change would work. We're at a point now where we know change is not coming, and it's now all about adaptability. We are not going to reverse the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So what's ahead of us?
Well, I mean, it is too late for any amount of emissions reductions to avoid catastrophic climate change. But I think it's important to stop and think about what it means to be too late. Because what it means is that we are committed to a period of very intense change, probably more intense than our civilization has ever seen. And to me, that makes activism more important than ever, because if we're going to have to navigate through this period of intense change, it really matters who's steering the ship. And, you know, going through that period of rapid change with an educated and engaged citizenry that feels like they can hold their government accountable and determine the course of their own society, there's a lot of room for progress there. There's a lot of things that we need to fix in our society anyway. And there'll certainly be hardships, but there's a lot of opportunity there as well. But going down that road with an ignorant, apathetic citizenry that's afraid of their own government and feels like corporations get to write all the rules, that's where things can be pretty ugly and pretty scary.
And what you describe has to take place on a global basis.
Yeah.
The film is Bitter 70. I think you'll find this particularly interesting. This gentleman has done us all a favor. Tim DeChristopher, thank you very much.
Great pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is Climate Justice Movement with Tim DeChristopher. Tim DeChristopher is an American climate activist and co-founder of the environmental group Peaceful Uprising. On December 19, 2008, Tim disrupted a highly disputed Bureau of Land Management, Oil and Gas lease auction of 116 parcels of public land in Utah's Red Rock Country. Tim had no intention to pay the $1.8 million. Tim was removed from the auction by federal agents, taken into custody, and questioned. Tim DeChristopher served 21 months in prison from July 2011 through April 2013. During the court sentencing hearing, Tim DeChristopher made this statement, quote, "At this point of unimaginable threats on the horizon, this is what hope looks like. In these times of morally bankrupt government that has sold out its principles, this is what patriotism looks like. With countless lives on the line, this is what love looks like. And it will only grow," unquote.
Tim DeChristopher disrupted a highly disputed BLM auction, effectively safeguarding thousands of acres of land. Not content to merely protest outside, Tim entered the auction hall and registered as bidder number 70. He outbid industry giants on land parcels, which, starting at $2 an acre, were adjacent to national treasures like Canyonlands National Park. He won 22,000 acres of land worth $1.7 million. 2 months later, incoming Interior Secretary Ken Salazar invalidated the entire auction. Yet DeChristopher was indicted and tried on two federal felonies and spent 21 months in prison. Released in April 2013, DeChristopher is the subject of a documentary film, Bitter 70, which opened this weekend at the Music Hall in Beverly Hills and other theaters around the country. He joins me this week to tell his story. What led him to that auction? What went through his mind as he began bidding and winning? Why didn't he take a plea deal? What was his experience in prison? And what message does he have for others? We'll also talk about the state of the movements to deal with energy, environment, and climate change in light of Obama's recent speech and the still-hanging-in-the-air decision of whether or not we will build the Keystone XL pipeline. I'll read one quote from Tim DeChristopher's statement to the court at his sentencing hearing. "At this point of unimaginable threats on the horizon, this is what hope looks like. In these times of a morally bankrupt government that has sold out its principles, this is what patriotism looks like. With countless lives on the line, this is what love looks like, and it will only grow." Here on Free Forum, we explore the lives, the work, and the ideas of individuals that I suspect have pieces of the puzzle of a world that just might work. We look at new, innovative, provocative approaches to business, environment, health, science, politics, media, culture, all based on the fact that I believe we can do better, and I want to find out how. Tim DeChristopher is an environmental activist and founder of Peaceful Uprising, an organization dedicated to creating livable futures and empowering nonviolent action. He's best known for his act of civil disobedience and which I just described. And Christopher spent 21 months in prison for his actions, as I said. He's a graduate of the University of Utah, and he will enter Harvard Divinity School in the fall of 2013. Welcome to Free Forum, Tim DeChristopher.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's really a pleasure. I've been following this since that auction made the news, and really enjoyed the film Bitter 70. It's interesting how the film manages to generate out sort of from this incident into a lot more things for people to think about and stand up to. Now, I always like listeners, Tim, to get a feel for the people behind the ideas and the work that we talk about. Now, in your case, I think that you are very much the story we're talking about today. What moved you to take the actions you took, and how has taking those actions and experiencing those consequences impacted who you are and who you will be? You're 31 at the moment, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, I just did that quick bio, but could you tell us in your own words a bit about your path, and feel free to mention mentors, turning points, moments of decision?
Okay. Well, a lot of what put me in position to take this action was the realizations that I was having over the course of 2008. In the years leading up to that, climate scientists were really realizing that a lot of their worst case scenario projections were in fact overly optimistic. And so that was sinking into me a little bit later over the course of 2008. And I was seeing that what we were doing as a climate movement really wasn't working, certainly wasn't getting our government on board to take any action in response to this crisis. So I was building up the commitment that I needed to take that sort of action. I was also going through that period of despair that I see that a lot of climate activists have gone through, of realizing that in a lot of ways it was too late to prevent catastrophic climate change, and that we were heading down this path of a very rapid change. And so I had to go through that period of despair and come out of that with less hesitation, ready to take bold actions, and feeling to some degree that I had nothing to lose by taking actions and shaking things up. At the same time, I was studying social movement history and seeing the important role that civil disobedience has played in most of our successful social movements in this country's history, and the need to really challenge those in power to have confrontational strategies, not just to appeal to those in power, but to pressure those in power to actually change. And so all of that kind of put me in the mindset that I was in going into that auction in December of 2008, where I was ready to take bold action, and I didn't especially know exactly what that would look like, but I felt empowered to do something effective to stand in the way of what was going on in that auction. I saw that auction as a prime example of the drill now, think later mentality that was really driving our climate crisis, and so I saw it as good of an opportunity as any to take a stand. And so that's my mindset going into that point.
Okay, I want to because in that moment, you came more willing than ever to take bold action, and not sure what it would be, and here you are at this sort of choice point. I want to, just because the actions you took. I just remember I read the story in the your local weekly there, and the writer. It's a wonderful article, long article, but the writer ends up saying, you know, what he did, I couldn't do, basically, is kind of the last line of his piece. And I think there's an awful lot of listeners out there that share many of your perceptions of what's going on, whether it's climate change or you know, other issues of justice and so on. And I'm curious what goes on in the individual human being that shifts them from one of the many who signs the petitions and so on to one who is willing to go to prison. So if you could... you were working in economics, correct? What sort of work were you doing in economics in college?
Well, I was studying at the University of Utah, which has ironically one of the most progressive economics programs in the country that teaches anything other than neoliberal economics. And you know, so I was learning a lot about corporate influence of our government and how big corporations distort market economics and that sort of thing. And I was focusing, my research that I was doing at the time was focusing on alternatives to the GDP,
mm-hmm.
So alternative measures to well-being. I saw that as one of the areas that was really distorting a lot of our policy, that we were making decisions based on supposed economic progress because it raised the GDP. The GDP was not measuring the things that most people actually valued.
Very good. Okay, this is Free Forum. I'm Terrence McNally. I'm speaking with Tim DeChristopher about his act of civil disobedience in saving over 20,000 acres of pristine public lands in Utah and landing himself in prison for 21 months. The documentary Bitter 70, which tells his story, opened this weekend at the Music Hall Theater in Beverly Hills and elsewhere around the country. And there will be screenings rolling out in cities where it doesn't get a theatrical run. There will be screenings rolling out. And to learn more, you can go to peacefuluprising.org. That's the group that Tim co-founded, peacefuluprising, one word, .org, or Bitter 70 Film, and that's the number 70. So it's bitter70film.com to learn more about the film. Okay, so that's what you – and how much you're a student at the University of Utah. How much of your time and attention is going to activism or environmental activism?
I would say a decent portion. I had made that commitment to take some kind of effective action like that well before the auction. And, showing up at a lot of different things, looking for an opportunity to be effective, showing up at hearings, at rallies and things like that, and generally going away feeling like I hadn't done anything worthwhile. And I just happened to show up at this one and see that opportunity. And that's part of why I was able to make a relatively quick decision to jump at that opportunity, because I had showed up at many other things and left feeling frustrated. I think I was at a point where I was very ready to take that opportunity there.
Very understandable. Let me ask you to tell us about two conversations or events that happened, in the time leading up to this. One, a conversation you had with Terry Root, who's a PhD, who's a member of the IPCC, the intergovernmental body that has rendered its analysis of climate change for years, and you at one point have a conversation with her.
Yeah, that was in early 2008. Terry Root was one of the Nobel Prize winners, who just the year before had won the Nobel Prize for her work on climate change. And I talked to her after a presentation that she gave, and I asked her about some of the charts and things that she was showing that didn't present any scenario in which we reduced carbon emissions in time frame necessary to avoid key tipping points. And I talked to her about that afterwards, and she said, "Well, you're not missing anything. There was no scenario that we could come up with where we avoided all those worst-case consequences that we've been talking about." She said there were things we could have done in the 80s and things we could have done in the 90s, but now it's most likely too late. And she literally put her hand on my shoulder and said, "I'm sorry, my generation failed yours." And that was pretty shattering for the position that I was in at the time. I had been doing a lot of research up until that point, so I think I was in a position where I could understand what she was saying, but it was still very shattering to me to have a Nobel Prize winner tell me that my future was so bleak. And that's part of what pushed me into that period of despair that I was talking about
mm-hmm.
earlier. And I think that's why I was able to engage in the level of activism that I was afterwards,
mm-hmm.
Because I'd already been through that despair. You know, what I see from a lot of other activists that are, signing the petitions and that sort of thing, it seems like they're spending the majority of their emotional and intellectual energy trying to avoid that despair. They're trying to grasp at any straws that they can that are going to give them the hope that things are going to be able to stay the same.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, you also mention a speech that you heard Naomi Klein give at Bioneers, and Bioneers has been an annual fixture on this show. Kenny Azabel and some of the speakers, I have them on like almost every year a few weeks before the conference. So I it was interesting for me to see that, that was another pivotal moment. Tell us about that.
That was for the speech that she gave in the fall of 2008. It was just before Obama was elected, but after McCain's campaign had pretty much imploded. So it was a given at that point that Obama was going to be elected. And she was kind of going through the reality of the situation that we were in with climate change and the promises that Obama was making in his campaign, and showing that even his best promises, which of course he hasn't come close to living up to, even those promises were not in line with what was actually necessary to turn things around on climate change. And she talked about why Obama was taking the positions that he was, because he's somebody who has found success by finding the center and going there, and that's his political MO, and that's probably not going to change. That Obama is a centrist. If you look at his history, he's somebody who finds the center and goes there.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Hi, I'm former Vice President Al Gore, and I'm here to speak the truth, even though it might be inconvenient. Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but you don't need to be spiteful. So hot there's no chance of snow. Told you so, told you so, told you so. Because of this global warming, the North Pole is now transforming. Santa's suit is too hot, and so when he goes, wears a low-rise Speedo. Though the weather is not the norm, it's reversing the natural law. Teddy Kennedy's daiquiri's warm, and Hillary's starting to thaw. The planet is slowly dying. I'm serious, I'm not lying. Coastal flooding will start to grow. Told you so, told you so, told you so. But if Florida's first to go, let it go, let it go, let it go. I'm serious.
And now for something completely different.